Mishnah Yom is for Monday, the 21st day of Kislev, Tavshin Pei Dalad, Masechta Yevamos, Perek Achadasar, Mishnah Zayin. Our Mishnah is going to continue the same theme about a person who was born to a mother who did not wait 3 months between her first and second husband. We do not know who the father is. Now we're going to talk about where not only do we not know who the father is, but we also have an additional complication that the one husband was a Yisrael and one was a Kohen, which means that we don't know if the Sofek, if this child is a Sofek, is a Yisrael or a Kohen. Says the Mishnah, Hoye Echad Yisrael Vechad Kohen. One of the husbands was a Yisrael, one was a Kohen. We don't know if it's a full-term pregnancy of the first or seventh, or from a seventh-month pregnancy from the second. Noise Isha Ru'uya L'Kohen. So that Sofek has to marry a woman who a Kohen can marry, who is fit for a Kohen. For example, he cannot marry a divorcee in case he's a Kohen. Ve'eino mitame l'meisim, nor can he go and make himself tamei with corpses, because he might be a Kohen. But ve'im nitma, if he did become tamei, eino Sofek is harboim, he would not get the lashes that normally a Kohen could get for violating purposely the love, the loisasa of do not make yourself tameh, because he may not be a Kohen. Ve'eino oichel batruma, he cannot eat truma, in case he's not a Kohen, maybe he's Yisrael. Ve'imochal, if he did eat truma, eino mishalm ken v'chomesh, he does not have to pay the principal and a fifth, or what we call a quarter, because he can say, I'm a Kohen, I'm allowed to eat truma. At least he can say, prove to me that I'm not a Kohen. And until one can do so, he does not have to pay. He does not get a portion of truma that is given in the threshing floor. And he can sell the truma that he separates from his own produce. Normally you're not allowed to sell it, you have to give it to the Kohen, it's not yours. But he may be a Kohen himself. So he does have to separate truma, but he sells it to the Kohen, some Kohen who is a definite Kohen, v'hadomim shaloi, and he can keep the proceeds. He's not obligated to give the money away, because he can say, bring a proof that I'm not a Kohen, I might be entitled to this. So the actual truma he can't eat, but the proceeds of sale he can use. V'eino cholek, but at Kodshah HaMikdosh, he does not get any portion in Kodshim, even things like skins, like the leather of the karbonis, the hides of the animals, which normally Kohenim get. And we cannot give him kodshim to offer them on the Mizbeach. He cannot serve as a Kohen. And we do not take away what he's got in his hand, meaning if he had to bring a korban chatos or an osham or an oila, we do not force him to give his korbanos to the men who were serving on that week. The Kohenim had different weeks that they would serve. It's called a mishmar. He does not have to give it to them. He's permitted to give it to any Kohen and any Mishmar that he wants. Ufotor, and he is exempt min hazroya v'halchayayim v'hakeva. He does not have to give the gifts that a Yisrael normally has to give from his animal. This is ordinary animals. These are not kodshim. The zroya, the front foreleg, the elochayayim, the jawbone and the attachments, v'hakeva, and the maw, or the stomach. These are normally given to the Kohenim. He does not have to give it. He can say, prove that I'm not a Kohen. Uv'choyro yehei roya ad she'yistayv. And if he has a firstborn animal born in his herd, he does not have to give it to the Kohen. What he can do is he can wait till it gets a blemish, let it graze in the field. Once it gets a blemish, then he can have it shechted and eaten well with its mum. He gets, of course, someone to inspect it, and if it's a valid mum, a valid blemish, then he can shecht it and eat it. A Kohen, a bechor, is allowed to be eaten if it's blemished by even a non-Kohen. V'noisnin alav chumre Kohenim v'chumre Yisraelim. We place upon him the stringencies in case he's a Kohen and stringencies in case he's Israel. And that refers to the korban mincha, a mincha. As we've said earlier on, a few Mishnahs ago, if he brings a meal offering, a mincha, the law is that a mincha of a Kohen has to be totally burnt, never eaten, nothing eaten. Mincha of Yisrael is only a kmitza, only a fistful of flour is burnt, but the rest of it is eaten by the kohenim. Here, however, we don't know what he is. So therefore, we cannot burn it all in case he's a Yisrael. And we cannot eat it, the kohen can't eat in case he's a kohen. So we take the kmitza, like we would do for a regular mincha of a Yisrael, offer it up on the Mizbeach, in case he's a Yisrael. The rest of it, instead of eating it, being eaten by the kohenim, it gets burnt, but not on the Mizbeach. You cannot put it on the Mizbeach. It gets burnt in a place called Beis Hadeshen, a place where they would put the ash each morning. That is the place, the Beis Hadeshen, that's where they would burn the shirayim, the leftover of the mincha. Why can't they put the whole thing on the Mizbeach? And that's because of a pasuk that we learned earlier on, Lesaktiru Mimenu Ish El Hashem. You're not allowed to put on the Mizbeach something that's already had part of it on the Mizbeach. And here, there's already been part of it on the Mizbeach, namely the kmitza, the fistful, so you cannot put the balance on the Mizbeach. It gets burnt in the Beis Hadeshen. So now we've satisfied the two options, the two possibilities, if he's a Kohen or if he's a Israel, both have been satisfied now. Hoyu Shneim Kohenim. What happens, says the Mishnah now, if both husbands were Kohenim, the first and the second? It's just that we don't know who is the father, but we do know one thing for sure, that this child, although there's a suffix as to who his father is, what we are sure about is he's a definite Kohen. So what's the halacha now? Hu oinin aleihem. He must practice aninus, means mourning on them. If one of them dies, he's like an oinin. He has to behave like an oinin. And oinin is a person who is not allowed to do any karbonis or eat any kodshim. It's the period of time until the burial. And the reason that he has to conduct himself as an oinin each one, because that might be his father. So on both husbands of this woman, the child, the suffix, has to be an oinin for both of them. Vehem oinin in alav. And they, in turn, each one of them, the husbands, will be an oinin on him, which means that they cannot do the avoida or eat kodshim if the suffix dies. Because for each one of them, that could be his son. And if it's his son, then they are oinin him. If they're oinin him, they can't do the service in the Beis HaMikdash. Hu eino mitame lahem. He cannot make himself tummy to them. Behem einon metamin lai, and they cannot make themselves tummy to him. Again, it's a suffix isur. We have to be machmer. The Gemara has a question on one of these statements, on one of these halachas in the Mishnah, and that is who heim oinin in alav. They, both husbands, will be an oinin over him. They have to practice aninus. Because they may, there may be his son. Each one has to worry. Maybe it's his son, and therefore he must be an oinin if the suffix dies. The Gemara has a problem with that, because that seems to imply that both kohenim are alive. Now, how could that be? How can you have two husbands who are kohenim and both alive? If the first kohen, first husband, has given her a get, has given her a divorce, presumably that's the only way the second husband could have married her. If he gives her a divorce, then she'd be also to the second husband. A kohen can't marry a divorcee. And if the second husband did marry her nevertheless, did an avera, and say married the divorcee, then the son could be a cholol. If he's born to the second husband, he may indeed be a cholol. So why do we say he cannot make himself tummy to them? He should be able to. Why? Because to the second husband, okay, he can't make himself tameh, maybe he's the son of the first husband, he might be a proper kohen. But to the first, if the first husband dies, he should be able to make himself tameh. Why? Because if he's the son of the first husband, then even a kohen is allowed to make himself tameh to a father. And if he's the son of the second husband, that's not a problem, because then he's a cholol. If he's a cholol, that means he's an unfit kohen, he's allowed to make himself tameh sim. So what does it mean? They are oinin him, or what? How could it be that he doesn't make himself tummy to them? So therefore, the Gemara explains that the only way we can understand this is if the first husband gave her kiddushin on a condition. That condition did not eventuate, did not happen, which means that effectively she was never married to the first husband. There still is a possibility the child is from that husband, but there was no marriage. And if there's no marriage, there's no get required. If there's no get required, then she could get married to the second husband. Now, she should have waited 3 months, but she didn't. She married in between, in that period. In this situation, that's how you can have both husbands, first in inverted commas husband, because the first one's not really, where they're both alive and they're both a kohen. And you could possibly have a situation, he could be a kohen that's kosher. So, this is what we say, they are both onanim over him, but he cannot make himself tummy to them in case he's a kohen kosher. Who eino yorish oison, he cannot be yorish them, because they, the other children of the husbands, let's say they've got other kids, they can reject him and say, sorry, bring a proof that you're our brother. Until you do that, you're not sharing in the estate of our father. So he does not yorish them until he can bring a proof, which really he can't, but until he can bring a proof who his father is, that he can't be yorish. But avalhem yorishim, I say. But they, the two husbands, the two possible fathers, they, if they have no other children, then they will be yorishim. If the Sofik, I should say, did not have any children, then the din is a father is Yerusha son. But because we don't know who the father is, they would have to split up the Yerusha of this Sofik child. Ufotur al makosai val kilosai shel zeh. And he's exempt. Normally if a child, chas v'shalom, hits the father, draws blood or curses the father, he can be killed for that. But in this situation, either one that he hits or curses, he can't be chayiv misa because it may not be his father. However, what's interesting is if he did hit both of them, struck them both at the same time, or cursed them in the same breath, then he would be chayiv. V'oilo b'mishmora shel zeh v'shel zeh. And he can go up to the mishmar, he can enlist in the week of the kohenim's duties. The kohenim were divided into 24 mishmaras, 24 groups. Each group would serve for 1 week in the seder according to an organized order. This kohen can serve in the mishmar of each one of this sofik office on the sofik of his father. Whatever mishmar he wants, he can do that. Some of Roshim in the Mishnah wants to tell us that the people of the mishmar can't stop him. Okay, they can't stop him. Others learn in the Gemara that on the contrary, not only they can't stop him, but they're able to force him to work in their mishmar. People shouldn't say, oh, you've got someone who's possible in your mishmar. Ve'ein ha'cholak, but he cannot get or ask for a portion of the kabbonis because each one of the kohenim can reject him and say, sorry, you're not from our mishmar. However, imhoyu shneim be'mishmar echad, if they were both husbands, belong to one group of kohenim, and also one base av, one family, because the kohenim then divided into six bote avos, and each day they would work separately, according to the days of the week, then notel chelek echad. They would take one chelek. This sofik would at least get one chelek. Why? Because he's definitely belonging to this mishmar, because both of the potential or possible fathers are serving in the same mishmar, the same group, and the same base of, the same family. Perek Yud Beis, Mishnah Aleph. How does chalitza work? The parsha of Yibum, the Torah describes and says, if a man does not want to take his sister-in-law, the wife of his deceased brother who died of that children, then she goes up to the elders of Beis Din and she declares, my brother-in-law, my Yavam, has refused to establish a name for his deceased before his brother. He did not want to marry me. Then the elders call him and they say, no, say what you say. And he has to get up and say, I do not want to take it, or I have not wanted to take it. Then the sister-in-law, the Yavama, comes to him, approaches him in front of the elders. She takes off the shoe from his foot, spits in front of him and says, So shall be done to the man who will not build the house of his brother. And the name shall be called Beis Chalotzanal, the house where the shoe was taken off. That's what the Chumash says. Let's see in the Mishnah some details about this. Mitzvah Chalitza b'shlosha deyanim. First of all, how many deyanim do you need for a chalitza to take place? Three. We know this because the Torah says, Kenim, she shall approach the elders, miyat rabim shnayim, to get the minimum of anything, and plurally you need to have two. A basin cannot be even numbered. You need to have always odd number, so you need to add another one that makes three. So we need to have three deyanim. Even if the three of them are ordinary people, they're not particularly qualified as a dayan, that's fine. The Gemara explains, the Mishnah says dayanim to tell us that, yes, they should be dayanim, meaning they should at least know enough to be able to read the section in front of the Yovam and the Yevoma so that they can repeat those psukim. The Yevoma, they have to know how to say, my brother-in-law has refused to establish a name in the Jewish people. He did not want to take me. They have to know how to read that and then to tell that for the Yavama so she repeats after him. And for the Yavam, they have to teach him to say, or get him to repeat the words, Loi chafatzti lekachta, I did not want to take her. And then again, they go to the sister-in-law, to the Yavama, and they have to teach her to say, so shall be done to the man who will not build the house of his father. Now, although our Mishnah only says three deyanim required for chalitza, the Gemara actually says one should add another two so that the chalitza will be done in front of five people in the end. This is to publicize the matter. Those two that are additional do not need to be knowledgeable like the first three. They don't have to know how to read or how to read it for the other parties, for the Yavam and the Chalitza and the Yavam. That's fine. These are just additional there to publicize the Chalitza, the story. Chalitza b'mino Chalitza sukshera. If she used a shoe, she took off the shoe. A shoe is normally of leather, a leather shoe, and it has to be a complete shoe, not torn. Then the Chalitza will be kosher. You cannot use, for example, something that's made out of felt, as we'll soon see, if it's not made out of leather. Now, another important halacha is that the shoe has to be complete, can't be torn. The nail has to be leather, and the leather has to be complete. And if she did a chalitza, she took off the shoe, and the shoe was torn on the top, the chalitza was absolutely possible. So, the chatchila, the Gam Chazal, the Chachamim wants the chalitza to be done with a sandal. A sandal in those days was made of very hard leather. And the reason for that is because other shoes or other different types of shoes could be torn. And if it's torn, they might use it. Now, you're not allowed to use a torn shoe. It has to be complete, shlema. So when you have this sandal that was made out of very hard leather, it would be you'd be able to use it because if it was torn, it just wouldn't fit on the shoe. Since it wouldn't fit in the shoe, there's not a worry that he might come to use a sandal which is torn. Whereas the shoe, made out of leather, that's more a closed thing. If it's torn, they might be tempted to use it, and that would make it terrible. That would be possible. So, says the Mishnah further. Van pilin. So again, lechatchila, it's better to use the sandal. This is the very hard leather. Because again, once it's torn, it can't fit on the foot, so they're not going to use a torn one. If they didn't and they used a minol, they used a regular shoe of leather, would that be kosher b'dayavad? And the answer is yes. Ban pilin, what happens if they used a soft, like a house shoe or a slippers made out of wool or linen or felt? The chalitza will be absolutely possible. That's not called a nal. That's not called a shoe. A shoe has to be leather. Besandal sheyesh le'akev kosher, and if the sandal has a heel at the back that covers the whole back of the foot, kosher, the chalitza will be kosher and fine. B'she'en le'akev, if it doesn't have a leather, it doesn't have this leather coming up around the heel, posel, it will be unfit. Min harkuva olamata chalitza sekshera. If she took it off, she took off the shoe, but it was It was anywhere from the knee downwards. The straps of the sandal was tied from below the sandal, below the knee. Chalitzos kshara. The chalitz will be kosher. Why? Because the Torah says she shall take it off his foot. Anything below the knee is still satisfies the condition, the definition of me'al ragloi, from his foot. It's still called the foot, anything below the knee. However, minar kubul ma'ila, if the ritzuis, if the straps of the sandal were tied above the knee, chalitzos psula, then the chalitz is no good. The main chalitza is really the undoing of the straps. And since the Torah says it should be me'al ragloi from his foot, from the foot, that, well, anything above the knee is not called taken off from the foot. Others say that the Mishnah wants to tell us about a amputee, chas v'shalom, person who doesn't have a foot, that if it's cut off below the knee and she took off the shoe from there, the chalitz will be kosher. But if it was cut off, amputated, above the knee, then that's a problem. The chalitz will be possible.